A podcast to honor the gods.
This better come with a sacrifice.
Deus Ex Media.
I'm Christina Kahn.
And I'm Leela Hilton.
And this is Burn Before Reading,
the podcast about shitterature.
We're here to examine the terrible writing we did when we were younger.
And talk about other cringy literary topics.
As you may know, I eagerly started this podcast before it occurred to me to invite my beloved Leela into the fold.
Oh, I forgive you.
This episode was recorded long, long ago.
And because of that, it may be in a format you're not familiar with.
And it sadly does not even feature Leela, not even at all.
So thanks for giving us room to be flexible while we get this show on the road.
And you can look forward to things leveling out soon.
This episode is still excellent and really fun.
So enjoy the show.
Woo, thanks, guys.
We will start, as always, with a reading of the work.
This is Black Dahlia by Alex. Pirouette, spin, and collide. This is the night the Black Dahlia dies. No more hearts left dying on the floor. Leave behind memories and lovers abhorred. This masquerade began so long ago. She was a dancer, unprepared for the show. Yet she was swept away, caught up in his dance. Lovers and sinners, an untimely romance. From partner to partner she did glide. Affixed with a mask, her heart was blind. The ribbons on her point shoes hung her high, bodies swinging lifelessly from rafters in the sky. Her corset clung tightly to the curves of her waist, held together by only black ribbons and lace. Pirouette, spin, and collide. This is the night the Black Dahlia dies. No more hearts left dying on the floor. Leave behind memories and lovers abhorred. She remembered the first time she had met his eyes. They put a clasp on her heart she could not defy. In his hands, a black dahlia did he hold, its petals caressing the very face of angel gold. Black and bleeding, it held death and life, soft as the rain, yet sharp like a knife. She accepted his gift, sewed it into her heart, its roots cut deep, tearing her apart. In her eyes bloomed petals and thorns. She had become his dahlia, his love reborn. Pirouette, spin, and collide. This is the night the Black Dahlia dies. No more hearts left dying on the floor. Leave behind memories and lovers abhorred. She was a dancer, he just a man, but he stole her heart and their dance began. She had been waiting silently in the wings. Then along came this stranger. Death did he bring. Passionate kisses dripped from their lips like poison, fingertips tracing along the lust and the sin. In circles they danced to the melody he spun. Unknown to her, the end had begun. She was his puppet dangling by heartstrings. He counted her steps, drove the blood from her veins. Pirouette, spin, and collide. This is the night the Black Dahlia dies. No more hearts left dying on the floor. Leave behind memories and lovers abhorred. Slowly but surely, the music still played. Many times she did falter, many times betrayed. The melody came from that old violin, a bittersweet remembrance of heartbreak within. She danced up on tiptoes through her, though her feet were broken, spun round and round in time with emotion. She tried to let go, run away from it all, but his hand clasped even tighter to prevent her fall. You are my love, the star of my show. Your heart is mine. I won't let you go. Pirouette, spin, and collide. This is the night the Black Dahlia dies. No more hearts left dying on the floor. Leave behind memories and lovers abhorred. Opening night, the pinnacle fixation. His dancer was now his dahlia creation. She was an image of utter perfection, her blossoming soul scarred from dissection. The lights now dim, the curtain rise, but no dancer appears to the sight of their eyes. Instead, they behold the neck and the noose, the dahlia dangling from the ceiling obtuse. Her petals hung loosely, her point shoes untied. The music stopped. The dancer had died.
Oh my God.
Pirouette spin and collide. This is the night the black dahlia dies. No more hearts left dying on the floor. Leave behind memories and lovers abhorred. This mastery began so long ago. She was a dancer, unprepared for the show. Yet she was swept away, caught up in his dance. Lovers and sinners, an untimely romance. From dancer to dahlia she did glide, affixed with a mask, her heart he did blind. The ribbons on her point shoes hung her high, bodies swinging lifelessly from rafters in the sky. He never realized the thorns encircling her waist. Now his dahlia is buried, a forgotten face.
Holy shit. There you are. I'm so glad you're here. Congratulations, you have made it to Burn Before Reading. I'm Christina Kahn in real life and on socials, and I am here to beg you to read to me that poem you wrote in 2007, and then you print it out on the computer and cut it out and put it in a notebook.
Oh, this... I can't believe I got through that. That was excruciatingly long and painful to read.
Listeners, you may recognize the dulcet tones of my beloved friend Alex from My Cabbages, an Avatar podcast. Say hello to the listeners, Alex.
Hi, friends and fellow listeners. Happy to be here.
Yay! Okay. First of all...
That was a journey. If you're still here, well, y'all deserve a prize. I don't know. A cookie at least.
Honestly, I think this is an extremely fitting debut on Burn Before Reading. Because this, what we just read, I think is exactly what it's all about.
Just like I was all about it in 2007 when I was writing this poem on my open diary, listening to... The Bone Palace Ballet by Chiodos in the background. Even if you want me to let go, honey. Even if you want me to let go. And, it was a mood and a vibe, so...
Wait, what was the name? Did you just say an artist? Bone Palace Cafe? What did you say?
Bone Palace Ballet, which was a album Ballet. By a band named Chiodos, which was, I found out about this band through another friend of ours, Brooke Matherly, who at the time was dating a person. They gave Brooke a ton of CDs that just had random bands on them, and then accompanied by just a whole list of every song and why they chose it for her and what it meant to them and why this is so meaningful. And one of those songs was by Chiodos, and that's how I got listening to them. And then that was just the aesthetic for my entire year in 2007.
See, the word ballet was in there. That's part of the name of the song, was ballet?
It was the name of an album.
The name of an album.
Yes. And so if
so you, did that have anything to do with the ballet featured in this poem, or was is that happenstance?
It was just everything. I think at the time in high everything. School, you know, there was... If I would think that if the songs Helena by My Chemical Romance. Long ago, just like the
horse, died again. Oh my God, I think that might be my favorite song of all time.
Miss Murder by AFI. The Kill by 30 Seconds to Mars. And, you know, throw in Chiodos, that whole album, and this is okay. What would come out.
So before we go any further, first of all, tell listeners who maybe are familiar with you, what are your pronouns?
Sure. My pronouns are she, her.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great.
Okay, tell us a little bit about your, like, writing history. Like what's up? Is this a fluke? Were you a practicing poet when you were younger? What about now? What's up?
Yeah, great. So I have not written like for myself personally in a long time. I do that a lot in my day to day in the form of, you know, your droning emails and papers, etc. and surviving grad school. But growing up, and when I was, I would say that when I wrote this poem, I was in my creative writing prime.
I feel you. A lot of creative energy back in the day.
Oh, sure. So I, like a lot of teenagers, femme, non-binary or otherwise, had the, just like a lot of feelings at the time. And as a self described emo girl, I definitely had to get those out. And writing was very cathartic. And I thought I was super deep and exploring parts of the human psyche that no one could see in the light of day and would just
You're
like
being very relatable right now
with my ballpoint pen and my composition notebook that I used for my ninth grade creative writing class with Miss and oh my gosh, we could have a whole podcast episode just about Miss and
that's beautiful.
Yeah, she had a lot of cats. She always wore black. I'm pretty sure now, looking in hindsight, she was a witch. Very disorganized. Like, she would hand back papers to the wrong students in the wrong classes. Like, I'm not sure what was going on there.
Wait, what did she teach? What did you say?
Creative writing.
Creative. So here's the thing. One of my goals is to get my creative high school creative writing teacher on my podcast.
I have no idea what happened to Miss. All I know is that.
Gotta get Facebook friends with your favorite teachers.
I am still Facebook friends with some of my fave teachers, honestly. But I, unlike some of my friends, once I graduated high school, I never stepped back on that campus. I'll like anytime I'm back in North Carolina where I grew up, like, and I drive by, I'm like, huh, yeah, like, not much has changed, except everything around it is now super developed. And there's like a gas station across the street. And meanwhile, like, we had to drive like 2 miles just to get to like a fucking McDonald's or Wendy's was the like closest thing away. So, yeah, they have it made now. Anyways, no, don't know what happened to Miss except that she was let go as a teacher because she also was a teacher for like international baccalaureate or IB English for juniors, seniors, don't remember the year, but like she lost like a bunch of papers that were supposed to be submitted. Like they literally, because it's an international program, would have to be like sealed and mailed. And they usually were mailed to like other countries to be graded. And it was a whole thing. Like they were turned in late and like they had like pages missing and they were crumpled. And it was just, there was something going on in this. And I hope she got the help she needed, but she was let go as a teacher, and I don't know where she would be at this day and age. But she really helped my creative writing, and so I had a lot of journals, and they're all scattered about, and that's why I was able to show you and send you actual pictures of my journal. And you have my permission to post this on social media, the actual cover of the journal.
Thank you.
This poem, I think, probably captured my essence of writing at the time. Poems were my preferred medium. I tried writing a bunch of chapters to, like, a bunch of rom-com, like, really what I thought at the time were super sexy and scandalous. My equivalent of Tina Belcher fan, like friend fiction, honestly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And they just never got past, like, the second chapter.
So it's more so for me, it feels like, okay, like when I was like raised a girl, and that means that there were Barbies in my life.
Totally.
And like it's like more fun to set up the Barbies and put them in their outfit and like figure out what the scene is. Then it's more fun to do that than it is to like play with your Barbies. You know what I mean?
I totally feel you.
So you like set up this world. You're like, what if there was this cute girl named Prairie? Because I went through a phase where all my girls were named Prairie.
And Prairie. Then it's like, ooh. Very Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Just like setting up this world. And then you're like, cool. I don't want to do any of the hard work at all.
Yeah. I mean, if you like leave something long enough and come back to it, like they often say, you know, if you're writing and you need to like let something, you just can't edit yourself. You need to set something away and walk away. Well, if you walk away long enough, decades even, it comes back in style. And now we have cottagecore and Taylor Swift like making like 2 albums in a year while in like, you know, the pandemic, and everyone wants to like make bread and can their own shit and grow their own gardens and, you know, like make their own tampons. I don't know. Like, we're all here for that Prairie like DIY maker vibe.
I think the prairie thing for me was just a word that I thought would make a clever name. Mm-hmm. And it had less to do with the prairie itself.
I'm just thinking about who Prairie would be as a character. Like,
she was always a basic white bitch who was a little bisexual and a little loud.
Doesn't sound like anybody I know.
That's not a self-insert. Okay, but we need to bring our focus back to the Black Dahlia.
Yes.
Okay. I did not pre-read this whole poem before the episode because sometimes it's fun to just react cold.
In real time.
Here's the crazy thing about this poem. I was there with you during the whole thing, and there's a refrain, like the second line of the poem. No, hold on, let me go back to the first page. The second line of the poem says, "This is the night the Black Dahlia dies." And when we got to the end and the Black Dahlia died, I was like, what the fuck? Are you telling me she dies in this poem?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't think there was a single character. If you made it out of, if you were a character or an image in a poem that I wrote back then, you made it out alive. It was good for you. Good for you. Go tell your friends.
So why like this ballet theme? Like, what's the vibe there?
I honestly cannot tell you why. I have always been obsessed with the ballet and ballet imagery. My favorite artist is Edgar Degas, who did all of the paintings of the French ballet, which in hindsight now, you know, a grown artist man, like being in the back rooms watching young girls like changing mm-hmm. and dancing, not the best vibe, mm-hmm. but you know, there and you throw that impressionist filter on there and everything looks great.
Were you a dancer, Alex?
I was. I didn't go very far. And I mentioned it briefly in the intro. I made an allusion to Open Diary. I actually, like, I won't go on the whole saga, but Open Diary is basically like a live journal. It was like back in the day when people mm-hmm. were like, when message boards and blogging.
Really like blogging sites.
Absolutely. So that was mine. And I had another entry that I found along with this poem that I also posted to that site, was talking about my journey as a dancer and this idea that I love dancing. I started very young, from the age of like 4, and I continued, you know, through all the places we moved. I always kept up with dancing and I really enjoyed it. And then when I was 10-ish, around that age, I had an injury where I tripped over a doormat and tore all the ligaments across one of my feet.
That's such a consequence for just tripping on a doormat.
I know. It was a really thick doormat.
Holy shit.
I know. So that after that, people ironically gave me the nickname Grace, and that has stuck with me my whole life. And dancing was just never the same. And so the next level of dancing, if you will, where I would have actually started doing point and stuff, just didn't happen for me. And I've moved on and became a swimmer instead, which was really helpful for like therapy and stuff like that. Like water was just like another element for me. And I felt right at home, just like my girl Katara.
And oh my God, that's a wonderful Cora. Story. You saw my picture that I was at the bar tonight and they were playing the Headband episode specifically of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh, there's not a bad episode of that show.
We were literally drinking like margaritas and I was like, everybody shut the fuck up. Aang and Katara are dancing.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I had a bit of a like an interest in ballet as well. It was one of those things that I did when I was younger. And then as I got older, I think it maybe was something about like aspirational femininity. Looking back, you know what I mean? It's like, what if I was a beautiful, graceful, skinny ballet dancer?
Sure.
Wouldn't I be a hot thing?
None of us had body image issues during this time period.
Yeah, hard no.
We were super solid and comfortable in our bodies.
Why is the dancer's name the Black Dahlia? Because I'm going to be real with you. To me, it's giving stripper.
I love that for her. Or a drag queen, maybe. It could definitely be a stage name. This poem is just a regurgitation of like every
image that I just really vibed with probably at the time. Like, so I just had this image in my head, I guess, of like this dancer. And if, I'm not sure if people are familiar, like around this time, there was a movie that came out called The Black Dahlia, which was a movie about the murder that happened back in like, I think it was like the 1920s or 30s. It was a very violent murder that happened in California, where this woman was like, her body was just like, you know, and parts were just strewn out across like from this famous hotel, and the murder's never been solved. It's one
Holy shit, that's scary.
Yeah, it's one of like the country's most famous unsolved murders. And the name, they gave the name of the person, and it's a Jane Doe, but they named her the Black Dahlia. And so that's that whole like case, and like the, it's like a very film noir, like old Hollywood. I was also obsessed with like burlesque and like Moulin Rouge. I put together a mood board for this, you know, which would probably anything that would have inspired me at the time. And so Moulin Rouge and Nicole Kidman's character, she's like a dancer or a singer. Yeah, so like this like idea of like a dancer that I kind of jived with, like my story, but also just the imagery. And dahlias are my favorite flower. And just like this idea of like how you alluded to like femininity and dancers. And it's just, I don't know, probably also some fan of the opera. Christine Daae, you can probably be seen in this character.
It's definitely giving theatrical drama.
Very, very dramatic.
This couplet at the end of the second page, "You are my love, the star of my show. Your heart is mine. I won't let you go." I can picture like the Duke in Moulin Rouge singing that to Satine.
Either that or like, you know, the Phantom from a...
Yes, exactly.
Some it's George giving... Butler, or no, Gerard Butler.
It's giving horny drama, horny theater drama energy.
Yeah, which I was also a theater kid, so that also probably played into this. But yeah, it's just like, if you honestly, if you probably asked a chatbot GPT to like go and make an AI-generated song, like with some of like the mood board that I gave you, this is probably what would have come out. Like, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I wish I could say there was a deeper character in mind when I wrote this. And maybe at the time I did. But,
well,
you know, 15 years later, can't say that there's any one. I can't necessarily say what I was thinking when I wrote this, who this character is.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. A couple times this poem mentions he, the man, and with a capital H. Is that our Lord Jesus?
I was raised Catholic. I'm a survivor. So that's probably that. Or also Black Dahlia, like whenever it's like referencing her, like those are also capitalized. And I think I just capitalized he and like,
well, because this line specifically says he is just a man. Well, and it's like, well, that's not our Lord and Savior.
Yeah. No, he was just a man, but like,
can I make it any more obvious?
He was in love. Haven't you heard?
Oh my God. He was a punk. She did ballet. Black Dahlia.
Yay. Cause I actually think I did like imagine this as like a song or like a very epic, like rock opera emo ballad. And so
that's so many words
that was just
rock opera emo ballad. But I get it though, like I kind of get it,
and
kind of like Evanescence.
Yeah, and it's honestly, yes, Amy Lee was also someone who Amy Lee was probably part of my bisexual awakening, honestly.
I understand. And I have to say, like we mentioned, I'm looking at like pictures and text that Alex on November 16th, 2007 printed off of a computer and glued into a notebook. So this is like a scan. And
the font is this like very dramatic. I would say it's one step down from pirate font.
It is monotype cursiva. Cursiva.
Oh my God. Monotype cursiva. That's incredible. It's giving drama. And then the header is in, I know this one. I think it's called Impact is the name of this font.
Yep. So punk rock.
And then the first page has a black and white photo of point ballet slippers, which I feel like when I was younger and I did dance for like a couple years, it was like, wow, what if I was a point ballerina? And that was always like
that was the pinnacle
for me. Yep. Yeah. Being like on point. But now, bitch, I'm just on point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the third page, the photograph you sent me, I think is hinting at a larger picture of, dare I say, a black dahlia flower here.
You are right on the money.
Which dahlias are beautiful, and I actually just bought some for my next door neighbor's preschool fundraiser.
They're beautiful, and black dahlias specifically.
I bought lavender ones.
Are okay. My favorite. Like dahlias are my gothic favorite flower. All like just carte blanche. They are just beautiful, and there's so many different kinds and colors. And but I love the black ones. But they're even the black quote unquote. They like have different kinds, and they range from like deep blacks and purples and like reds, and who knows.
It's giving hold on, what the fuck is her name? Ebony Darkness Dementia Ravenway.
Yes, Ebony
Black Dahlia.
Yeah. Which I didn't ever honestly read My Immortal.
You don't have to just watch.
Well, I did eventually, like, or parts of it through later in life, but this precedes that, I think, or at least my exposure to it.
I really like that you have like a refrain in this poem. I think writing a refrain is a bold choice. And the thing with writing a refrain is that if it's not good, it's definitely funny to have to keep repeating the same words over and over.
I honestly think at the time, like, and this kind of plays into the idea that it was, I think it was a poem. And, you know, the structure, looking back on it now, how every poem that I wrote for some reason thought like every other line had to rhyme. And then,
yep.
But the throwing that refrain in there, almost like a chorus, like if it was a song that got repeated. Mm-hmm. And then I think like the imagery or in like the first full stanza where it's talking about like this masquerade began so long ago, like the last stanza of the poem is like a, you know, play on that again. So I don't know. I think those were all different ways of writing that I would use that were, mm-hmm. I'm sure at the time I thought super deep and original and so cool.
I get it.
Yeah. And in hindsight now, I hate it. I hate that refrain. It makes it so long. I think it's important at the beginning and like maybe repeating it again at the end, but in between mm-hmm. every stanza is just laborious.
Instead of a refrain, try a reprise, right? That's when you just repeat it once, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Like I definitely liked some of your creative choices made in the name of rhyming. Like you have like some of these, like from partner to partner, she did glide, which is not how people speak, but you do that for the rhyme. And I did that too when I was younger.
Some old English. I think I rhyme like poison with sin, which not necessarily rhymes that rhyme, but you know, you make it work.
Make it work, girl.
I'm sure if you broke down this poem and like analyzed it line by line and just put it into a Google search, you would probably find the songs that I like may have like, you know, pulled some of these songs, like the imagery in the refrain that repeats, like, heartbeats are dying on the floor, or no more mm-hmm. hearts left dying on the floor. There is a song by a band that was called Bedlight for Blue Eyes, which I don't think they've ever put out more wow. than one album, and no one ever heard them. And there's that's a song a vibe. That has a literal clip, and I can, like, link you the song on Spotify or whatever.
Please do.
But it has the lyrics like heartbeats are dying on the floor again. And so like I'm sure there's other songs like My Chemical Romance or Fall Out Boy or Panic the Disco, whoever I was loving at the time. Like this poem, I write sins not tragedies, like that whole like burlesque show, and I saw Panic at the Disco also with Brooke, and I dressed classic as a burlesque dancer, like, going to it, and it was their Nothing Rhymes with Circus tour, which was when they went on tour for their first album, and yeah, this album, or this poem fits that motif perfectly.
That's so, yeah, that's so fun.
I'll, like, I don't know, also, like, there's a YouTuber, I forgot her name or their name, I'll also share it, but the title is, like, just, you know, the aughts, like, bisexual gaze, and, just talking about how all of, like, the songs and energy, like, when, it, like, you know, when Pete Wentz and Patrick Stump kiss each other, like, in the, like, Dance Dance video or whatever, right, or, like, these two guys kissing each other, it's like, ooh, scandalous, but they weren't gay, like, you know, it was just, like, but we all fed into that energy, that bisexual energy of the early aughts. And yeah, that's, I feel this feels fits that vibe. If we're talking about maybe works that would have inspired me when I wrote this, I definitely, some of my favorite poems and things that I was reading at the time, Lord, Alfred Tennyson's, The Lady of Shalott was a poem that I really vibed with.
I remember reading that one.
And T.S. Eliot, The Wasteland. There is a lot of language and imagery. It's actually one of the poems that my creative writing teacher in ninth grade had me respond to, and just, like, a section of it. And then, like, how it made us feel, and, like, why this, these words were used and here and where, and then taking that and, like, rewriting it into our own. And I'm sure some elements of that came through too. Like, if I shared other poems that I wrote with you at the time, you would see a lot of repeating themes and images. So
Before we wrap it up, I want you to tell me if you think that this work, Black Dahlia, is it horny, sad, or just plain bad?
I'm going to say the Venn diagrams of sad, kind of bad.
That's a little horny, too, if you ask me.
Yeah, it is pretty horny. There's a lot of repressed sexual angst here. I mean, use words like lust and sin. Lots of corsets and curves and...
It's funny how reading this, it really does remind me of poetry I wrote around the same time. So thank you for bringing this on my show. The Black Dahlia has been a wonderful adventure.
Oh, I'm honestly, you were much nicer to it than it deserved. But I appreciate you having me. And it was honestly it's probably one of my more favorite pieces. I feel that might kind of still hold up. It's still definitely cringy, but it's not one that
what you're saying is you have worse shit.
Oh, there's stuff bring way it, deep baby. In that closet. Let's bring all bring those it, skeletons girl. Out. Time to do some spring cleaning. Well, yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, Tina. And I can't wait until next time.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Instagram at Nowalk.
What about your pod?
You can also find me for my podcast, My Cabbages, an Avatar podcast. We are covering The Legend of Korra at this point. I don't know where we are, but we have completely covered Avatar, The Last Airbender, episode by episode in its entirety. You can go listen to it now wherever you catch pod. You can also get us on Instagram, which is @mycabbagecast and mycabbagecast@gmail.com, or on Twitter, which is just @cabbagecast.
Everyone go listen to My Cabbages.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I'm not biased, though.
Alex, today I launched a book aimed at 9 to 12-year-olds. And I'm proud to say that I managed to hit one of the little bastards.
Ba-dum-tsh.
This podcast was created by me, Christina Kahn.
Hosted and produced by Christina Kahn and me, Leela Hilton.
Follow me online at Christina Kahn and buy my book, Indie Book Publishing from Start to Finish.
After you bought Tina's book, follow me online at Leels for Reels.
Our theme music was produced by Sakura Wishes.
And our logo was designed by Michael Hardison. Follow Michael on Instagram at RoyGBiv or check out his work at wildlingpress.com.
Thanks for listening, friends.
See you next time.
X Media.